Cape Talk, health and wellness.
And it is a very warm welcome to this hour-long focus on pigmentation brought to you by Skin Renewal. It's my great pleasure to have with us in studio two medical guests. And let me start by introducing Dr. Maureen Allam, who is the founder and medical director of the Renewal Institute, a general practitioner who's really over the course of her career taken a special interest in aesthetic and anti-aging medicine. And she does divide her time between Johannesburg and Cape Town. So glad to have the opportunity to grab you while you were with us in the Cape. Maureen, welcome.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks. Great
and
to be here.
It's lovely to have you with us. It's a welcome back to Dr. Nompelo Ganshaw, who you've heard on the show before, a dermatologist from the Cape Dermatology Clinic. She focuses on all types of skin problems, including general, pediatric, and surgical dermatology. It's lovely to have you back with us again.
Thank you for having me again in afternoon.
And a special word of welcome to our audience members who've joined us in studio to be part of the conversation in person today. A reminder, if you'd like to ask a question at any point, please just raise a hand and we will gladly get a microphone to you. And to those of you listening at home, remember you can ask by calling in on 021-446-0567 or leaving a voice note on 072-567-1567. Nompelo, it strikes me as slightly curious. In a country that has spent as long as ours has obsessing over the color of our skins, we actually don't all really know that much about how we come to look a certain way in terms of the pigmentation in our skin. So I thought it would be helpful to start today with just a layman's overview of how the pigment in our skins actually works.
Okay, so everyone, no matter what skin color you are, we all have melanin in our skin. It's just that it's different forms of melanin. So melanin is basically what gives us the color. It is produced by the melanocytes. So for people that are brown or black, they have a form of melanin that is called eumelanin. And then people that are other colors, like white people, they have what we call eumelanin, pheomelanin, sorry.
Okay.
So it's basically a eumelanin for people that are brown, black, and then you have your pheomelanin for white people.
And this is being produced by those melanocytes in the skin itself and contributes not only to skin color, melanin also influences the way our hair and our eyes look.
Eyes, yes.
Okay.
So that's where you also find, that is why you'll find out talking about albinism, people that have got albinism, they have problems seeing, and then they'll have their different hair color from other people. It's because their melanin on their eyes is not there, or a little bit of it. So that is why they cannot see properly.
Okay.
So it's good for eyesight.
Thank you for explaining that so clearly. Now, Maureen, what happens when those melanocytes are damaged or become unhealthy is that we start to see abnormalities of some sort in the melanin production and anomalies of the skin. What would cause that kind of damage?
So it's usually UV exposure. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of these patients coming into us who have this, you know, so we have to distinguish between normal pigmentation due to sun damage and pigmentation that we call hormonal pigmentation. Mm-hmm. And our rule at the clinics are if a person comes in before the age of 40 with this pigmentation developing on their face, even men, believe it or not, they can also get this hormonal pigmentation, then we classify it, we know, we look at it and we start treating it as hormonal pigmentation, especially if they're on the oral contraceptive or they've, you know, had a pregnancy and then a lot of sun damage. So you have to distinguish between normal pigmentation from sun damage. And that usually occurs after the age of 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then pigmentation, which is due to hormonal changes and to, you know, in the younger population.
Okay, and we're going to talk in detail about both of those particular occurrences during this conversation.
Another cause of pigmentation will be peaking for people that have got acne. So you get that form as well. So that's from trauma.
So actual physical damage
yes.
to the skin.
And also another one that is common is from just inflammation. So what you put on your face is very important. So you put on things that will irritate your skin, and then you also ended up with inflammation. And then when inflammation resolves, especially in people of color, then they get their pigmentation on their faces.
Okay.
So that's called post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. That's also a lot of deal with a lot of patients who've had dermatitis or who've had acne coming in with this PIH, we call it post-inflammatory hyperpigmentation. You're correct, yeah.
Okay, so there's lots for us to dig into in detail here. Before we start looking at those in detail, though, a couple of other broad questions. Are darker skin tones more prone in general to hyperpigmentation issues?
That's correct. Phototype, we talk about phototype 4 to phototype 6, so those will be people of mixed race up to those dark people that you find deep in Africa. So they are prone because they have that eumelanin we're talking about, and also it's all about how much they have. So they are prone to hyperpigmentation.
But as you already mentioned, it can affect anyone, and we'll talk a little bit more about men because that might surprise some of our listeners who I think associate these issues more with women than with men. Are there any genetic risk factors, Nompela?
When it comes to phototype, yes. But then when you talk about acne, we know there are genetic predispositions. So if your family has that problem, so most likely you'll have as well. And also people that have got melasma as well, usually they'll say, yeah, my mother used to be like this. But most of the time, it's just what you put on your skin or what happens to your skin that causes that.
Okay. Maureen, I know aging plays a role here. Can you perhaps just talk to us a little bit about what happens to melanin production as we get older and how that might translate into pigmentation?
Okay, so as you get older, your outer epidermis thins, and you actually get less melanocytes, but they become larger. And you'll find that on sun-damaged skin, you might even find that you have areas of decreased pigmentation that start developing on your forearms and on your legs. So, you know, so it's very – so it can actually be increased pigmentation with lentigines. So after the age of 40, you'll find that every year another one of these – you know, these brown macules start appearing on your face, especially if you haven't been using sun protection, and you've been, you know, especially outdoor people, you'll find that a lot of these brown spots start developing on your face and on your hands. We call these lentigines. And then you can also get decreased pigmentation. Like you have, you know, like your hair color also starts decreasing as you get older because you get decreased melanin. So
we can use hair dye to cover that, but not so easy for the skin. Okay. We have got our first voice note that's come through. I'm just going to ask my guests to pop their headphones on so that they can hear this clearly. Let's take a listen.
Pippa, what a fantastic start to your insert on pigmentation. I'm listening in my one ear while I say this, so that's why I'm basically a little off track, but I'm so grateful you didn't start off the pigmentation debate about ladies with sunscreen necks because they've been spraying perfume all over their necks. Pigmentation is such an issue. I know I have relatives who have damaged their skin and because of the South African sun have very dark marks around their necks from spraying perfume around their necks. But I'm so grateful that you've opened this discussion on pigmentation with the very important issue of albinism acceptance. Thank you, Pippa.
Thank you very much for that voice note. Okay, the issue of the perfume around the neck. Maureen, have you heard that before?
That is, you know, they do say that perfume can damage the skin. So we call that poikiloderma of Savate. When you start getting, you know, where the sun hits the neck, you'll find that the middle part of your neck is very clear. And it looks weird because you've got this clear patch down the middle where the sun, where the skin is protected by the jawline. And then when the sun catches the skin on the sides, that's when you get that poikiloderma, which is a mixture of melanin and blood vessels, telangiectasia. So it's just sun-damaged skin, which can be aggravated by perfume. Okay. And that is actually also quite difficult to treat because you have to treat both the melanin and you have to treat the blood vessels to improve that situation.
Okay. We are going to talk about treatment, I promise, and what your options are. In the meantime, though, let's just talk a little bit more about hyperpigmentation. Nompela, okay, we've spoken about this being then an excess of melanin being produced. Is it typically in a particular part of the face or body? Are some areas more prone to it than others?
Okay, so face is usually the one place that is more prone, especially with inflammation and also your sun exposure. So the face is usually one of those. And then sometimes for people that have got eczemas, they will get where they've had their eczema. But the face, the sun-exposed areas, let me put it like that, at the areas where you can see a lot of this hyperpigmentation.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about cause now. We've spoken about the fact that it is damage in some cases, sun damage, physical damage, the inflammation, you've spoken about that. Are there any other underlying factors besides those physical causes that you've mentioned?
So sun medication, anti-malarials usually are photosensitizers, so they can make one to have some antidepressant, your tricyclic antidepressants also. And there are certain diseases like Addison's disease, it can make one to go dark. So one mustn't just always assume it's because of. So just check out and rule out those other causes.
Having said that, of course, that is not a reason not to take the anti-malarial meds when they're called for, or the antidepressants. Is this something that I'm interested in? Is it a barrier to effective treatment that sometimes people are worried about the possible side effect of pigmentation? Not really.
I don't think I understand.
Okay. Now, perhaps it's not fair to ask the dermatologist that. I suppose you would ask the person who is treating the Addison's disease whether that is a concern for patients that might stop them from taking their meds. I don't know if anybody listening has a view on that. You're welcome to call in and tell us if you do. What about somebody's asking on the SMS line, Maureen, whether exposure to extreme heat can contribute?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I tell all my melasma patients, my hormonal pigmentation patients, that heat can also cause inflammation. Heat does cause inflammation, which can aggravate your hormonal pigmentation. So patients who go to Bikram yoga, or, you know, people who work with pottery, you know, with clay ovens, bakers, you know, when you get that when you open up that hot oven,
yes,
and you get that heat
that
on
blast
your face,
of heat,
yes,
yeah,
that blast of heat, that can also cause, you know, stimulate those melanocytes to make melanin and make your pigmentation worse.
Now, there is an old wives' tale exposed, because I was always taught that was good for your skin and that you should intentionally stand there and make sure your face was close to the oven when it was opened.
No, you also, you know, get people who sit near a fire for a long time, you get that changing of the skin on the legs, and that's called, erythema ab igneum. So heat does damage the skin. So you've got to be careful of too much heat as well, because that can aggravate the skin.
So basically what happens, remember we said melanin is there to protect you. So what happens if you are exposed to the heat, whether the sun or whatever, what happens? Your melanocytes, they become big because they have to protect you. That is why people get a sun tan. So what happens because of that, then there's too much involved, and then you get the damage to your melanocytes, and then your melanin gets deposited, and then that's what results to the pigmentation.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Now, having said that, particularly I'm interested about the heat exposure. Somebody has immediately asked us on the WhatsApp line, does that mean that very hot showers or even hot baths could potentially damage the skin?
You know, I haven't thought of that, but, you know, it could, because I lately am taking very hot baths, which is not really good for you, because I started Googling about hot baths and how it can actually cause, you know, like syncope if you have, you know, because all the blood goes to the periphery. So I'm sure quick hot shower would be fine, but prolonged exposure, you know, to the heat would cause a problem. And I find that patients, I never mentioned this, but patients who do Bikram yoga, you know, patients with melasma who do Bikram yoga, also we find that their pigmentation gets worse because of that heat. So I know Bikram yoga is great, but anything that produces heat can also produce pigmentation.
Okay.
Aggravate the pigmentation.
So hot showers will basically damage your barrier as well. So that's why...
The barrier. Well, I was going to say, I know as the good eczema patient I am, I've always been advised to avoid the hot baths because of the damage to the skin barrier. So for more than one reason, be careful about that. Let's go in more detail into the hormonal pigmentation, melasma, as you've mentioned. I mean, this is one of the nasty shocks that awaits women when they fall pregnant, that you not only have to deal with swollen ankles and wallowing around for a couple of months and feeling awful in the first trimester, you also run the risk of this pigmentation developing on the particularly the face. Maureen, can you just talk to us a little bit more about what's going on there?
Okay, so they say that oral contraceptives, pregnancy, UV damage all increases plasmin. So you get a substance called plasminogen, which converts to plasmin. And plasmin releases these FTPs, these inflammatory, pro-inflammatory cytokines that affect the skin and start stimulating the melanocytes. So we actually have something called tranexamic acid, which starts decreasing conversion of plasminogen to plasmin to start improving the barrier function of the skin, because very often our melasma patients have decreased barrier function. They've got increased, this plasmin also increases the blood vessels in the skin, in the dermis. That's why I said melasma normally comes with increased blood vessels together with the pigmentation. And then you also get, because of your, there's an enzyme in your dermis that gets upregulated that stimulates the fibroblasts, that decreases fibroblasts, so your barrier membrane becomes disrupted as well. And then you get the leaching of the melanocytes from the epidermis, the lower layer of the epidermis, into the dermis. And that is what, you know, proves a real problem for our treatments, when you get that dermal melasma. Mm-hmm. You know, much because the epidermal melasma is very easy to get, you know, to improve, because we can do peels, because that's, you know, the epidermis, you know, restores itself within 4 to 6 weeks. Your epidermis has, you know, completely changed. You get that, you know, so any pigment in the epidermis gets sent up to the top and then gets exfoliated. But when you have that breakdown of the basement membrane and you get the melanin being deposited in the dermis, that's when we have a problem.
So that means then, you might expect that many of these conditions associated with pregnancy disappear the moment you're no longer pregnant. That's not necessarily going to happen.
No, because you're sitting with that dermal melasma, and very often that's, you know, that's the most difficult to treat.
Okay.
And it's continuously, you know, being produced. But they say if you can stop the pigmentation developing in the epidermis, then less will leach out into the dermis.
Now, Corinne has asked on the WhatsApp what can be done to decrease hyperpigmentation caused by pregnancy, because hers has persisted even long after the pregnancy. You've explained why that might be. Is there anything she can do about it?
You know, so during pregnancy, you've got to be very careful what you take. You cannot take retinoids, because retinoids, like a retinol, decreases the transfer of the melanocytes to the keratinocytes. So that's great, but in pregnancy, you can't take that. So there are very few products that you can actually use during pregnancy, and very few treatments that we actually do in pregnancy. So you have to wait until the pregnancy is over, and then we start, you know, treating the melasma.
Okay.
But also, you know, just after your pregnancy as well, your hormones are still in fluctuation, so you have to wait a few months after your pregnancy to actually start treating your, you know, to start treating your chloasma. We call it chloasma in pregnancy.
In pregnancy, okay.
Cape Talk, health and wellness.
This is Cape Talk, and we're talking pigmentation with skin renewal. You can join the conversation on 021-446-0567 or by leaving a voice note on 072-567-1567. With us in studio, Dr. Maureen Allam and Dr. Nompelo Ganshaw, and several listeners. And we're going to go to our listener audience next, because Taryn had a follow-up question. Before the break, we were talking about the role of hormones in pigmentation. Taryn, welcome. What's your question?
Hi. It's great to be here today in the audience. My question is regarding loss of pigmentation. You have mentioned a number of causes which I relate to, including heat exposure through Bikram, being on the pill for skin. I was also using a moisturizer with retin A at one point, which I was concerned was too strong to my skin. Anyway, I would like to know what the loss of pigmentation usually looks like, because mine is sort of small dots all over my, covering my forehead. So is it usually, you know, in these sorts of spots or larger areas? And then I've been told that there is nothing that you can do to get your pigment back. So could you please speak to this?
Thanks, Taryn. Maureen, would you like to take
that? So you've got loss of pigmentation on your forehead. Do you have melasma? Do you have a hormonal pigmentation problem?
I mean, not that I've ever known about, you know.
And have you been out in the sun a lot? Because it's usually sun damage that causes that, that destroys that melanin cell. So,
I mean, I've had sun exposure, but actually I noticed this sort of forming more when I was overseas in the UK, where there's really not that much sun. But, you know, my concern is just, is there nothing
anything you can do? Look, most of the sun damage actually occurs before the age of 20. So I'm not quite sure. You know, we're quite a sporty person, because all my sun damage has occurred before the age of 20. You know, when I was playing hockey and had terrible sun, you know, burned terribly on my face without sunblock, because in those days, you know, we never had sunblock. So what we do, you know, with patients, we try. You know, it's very difficult, because, you know, we don't know how to repigment the skin. So what we do have a prescription drug that we sometimes use for patients who've got decreased pigmentation. And there is a new prescription drug that's available from a compounding pharmacy that's called Pigmarase that you can actually put on your skin. We use that for patients with vitiligo. Have you been diagnosed by, has the dermatologist diagnosed you and said it's not vitiligo, which is decreased pigment in the skin?
No, they They haven't given any cause. They've just said, you know, there's really nothing you can do. But this was a few years ago, so, you know, it's interesting to hear that you have some suggestions now.
Yes, so we do have a thing called Pigmaraz, which we can, you know, order from a compounding pharmacy, which we treat our vitiligo patients with. And you just put it on the lighter patches. And then we've also, like, we do, like, skin needling, and then we put another prescription drug on called Lumigan, which also, you know, that can also repigment the skin. And that, together with, a retinol, can improve, you know, loss of pigmentation.
Okay. So, Taryn, that's definitely something worth investigating further by the sounds of things. Maureen, it's interesting to hear about the treatment options here. So prescription drugs are available. What other ways are there of treating pigmentation issues?
You mean, like, Taryn had decreased pigmentation.
Yeah.
So normally with increased pigmentation, so if it is sun damage after the age of 40 and you're getting all these flat macules on your, you know, your arms and on your legs and on your face, the face is much easier to treat than the body. Mm-hmm. And we do something called limelight, which is an intense pulse light. And that destroys the melanin in the epidermis. Okay, so but you have to prep the skin. So it's very important. You cannot just come in for a limelight. So it's important to prep the skin, to prep the skin with a tyrosinase inhibitor to prevent the post-inflammatory pigmentation that Dr. Mampela was talking about. Okay, so we prep the skin for like 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, and then we bring them in for a limelight procedure, an RPL procedure. So that's one of the ways we can treat pigmentation. And then you'll find that if you've had a good treatment, you get like coffee grounds on your skin, and then that slowly, you know, sloughs off over the course of 7 to 14 days. And then we've also got other stronger lasers called non-fractional lasers like the Fraxel. So you get two wavelengths with the Fraxel. There's a 1550 that does wrinkles, and then you get the 1927 that does so it's the Fraxel dual laser that does pigmentation. But it only does 20% of the skin at one time, so you need more than one treatment. But with limelight as well, you also need more than one treatment. Okay.
So it's an ongoing process.
Yes, and then we got fractional lasers that are much stronger, like our pearl laser and our carbon dioxide laser that, but those two lasers come with downtime.
Okay.
The pearl laser, the ablative lasers. Okay, so the pearl and the carbon dioxide are ablative lasers, and the fractional gel is non-ablative. So you have about 2 to 4 days of downtime with a non-ablative one and about 5 to 10 days downtime with ablative lasers. And then we have got the superficial peels. So for PIH, superficial peels work well, and we combine that with like a retinoic acid peel over it. Mm-hmm. So the patients really peel. But with all the peels, we always prep first.
Okay,
so that's like PIH, post-inflammatory pigmentation, and sun damage pigmentation. And then, as I said, hormonal pigmentation is completely different because that comes with impaired barrier and all these veins, these telangiectasia in the skin, the increased capillaries in the skin. So what we also do, we have to prep the skin, and then we calm the skin down with all our anti-inflammatory treatments. Okay, so we repair the barrier with the special products to restore the actual barrier, because melasma and chloasma comes with impaired barrier, hormonal pigmentation. So we repair the barrier, and then we start with anti-inflammatory treatments, and they have to be on a tyrosinase inhibitor as well before we even start doing anything. Because once you start with a peel, you're taking away those protective layers on the top and you're making your skin more vulnerable. So you have to make sure that you've down-regulated those melanocytes, that they're not going to go mad and start producing more melanin.
That the actual treatment,
so they're almost like half dead. Yeah, so they've, so they're not so active. And then once we've prepped the skin, then we bring them in and we start doing all these anti-inflammatory treatments. And then we also, do a laser that's our anti-inflammatory laser, because it's got a very, very small pulse width that matches the pulse width of that capillary. And then it decreases those tiny capillaries in the skin, which are bringing in all the inflammation. And we know that inflammation, 80% of disease is due to inflammation. So if we can decrease the inflammation in the skin, we're going to decrease that activity on those melanocytes.
Nopela, is there anything you'd add to that from the dermatologist's perspective that you would have in your arsenal?
Okay, so for me, when I approach hyperpigmentation, there are three things that I look at. you have to stop the inflammation because that's the main cause. And then to increase your cell turnover so that you can remove that top layer of the skin, try and remove as much a pigment that is there. And also another thing, it's important that you decrease the quantity of the melanin that is in the skin. So the product that you use depends on all of those. So that's basically my approach to it. So I look at those three things.
Now, Maureen mentioned vitiligo, and we actually had an email that came in from our listener, Molly, who was not able to join us today, but really wanted me to ask you about vitiligo. And she said it was back in 1996 that she discovered a white patch on her neck. At the time, had no idea what it was and started simply wearing scarves to hide the imperfection. She says, I have since learned it's vitiligo. I've been using a product called Vitilox, but it hasn't really improved the pigment. And I now have patches all over my body as well as my hands. I understand that sadly there is no cure. Is that correct? She says, I have come to terms with it. I no longer feel the need to hide it, but I would like to know a bit more about the condition.
So vitiligo is an autoimmune disease. So what happens, it's your own body attacking your melanocytes and then you lose the pigment. So people with vitiligo don't have the pigment. So to stop the inflammation, you can use hydrocortisone steroids. You can use that on your skin. And then another thing that one can, depending on the surface area, if it's a lot, one can go for phototherapy. Phototherapy does help with vitiligo. And if it's a small area, you can try needling with some additional, like Dr. Maureen has mentioned, other things that you can use on your skin. So it's all about the surface area. So if it's caught early, the inflammation can be stopped. Unfortunately, if it has been going on for a long time and the surface area is also big, then usually it's too late to try and reverse the process, and hence people will go and depigment themselves completely.
Okay, thank you. And Molly, I hope that answer was helpful to you. Thank you for your email. You want to add something, Maureen? Yeah.
Can I add something? So how we treat autoimmune disease is we look at the gut. I know everybody talks about the microbiome, but it's so important. So you have to look at your lifestyle and what you're eating, because so we start doing gut repair, and which is they're the 4 to 6 hours of gut repair. So you would remove bad foods, okay, so gluten and dairy, alcohol and sugar also implicated, but we start patients off, you know, just remove the dairy, remove the gluten, because those are very inflammatory on the gut. You know, where is this inflammation coming from? So it's usually coming from the foods you eat, and it's coming from permeable membranes in the gut, okay, so which lands up in your skin, and then that aggravates your skin conditions, whether it's vitiligo, whether it's psoriasis, depending on the genes you have. Okay, so the genes load the gun, and then the environment pulls the trigger. So for vitiligo, I would go to a functional integrative doctor to just, you know, to help you along with gut repair. So remove bad bugs, remove bad foods, replace stomach acid. It's so important, stomach acid, because you need stomach acid to kill off all the bad bugs in our food that we eat. And we need stomach acid to absorb all our vitamins and minerals, which are important cofactors for all the 200 enzyme processes. And we need stomach acid to absorb our food. And then you replace, and then you re-inoculate your microbiome with probiotics. And then you restore the gut lining with glutamine or glycine. And then you retain that gut health with you know, our anti-inflammatory supplements like Mareva, which is curcumin in a phospholipid layer, or you can take omega-3. And there's another amazing new supplement called SPMs, which was developed by Harvard, which decrease inflammation, which resolve inflammation. So that's how we treat it at the Renewal Institute.
Okay, thank you for that addition. I believe we've got a voice note to do with heat and the impact of heat. Let's take a listen to that. If you could both just pop your headphones on again, please, to be able to hear this clearly.
Afternoon, Papa. Just a question on your heat that affects the skin. The question is, what about electric blankets? I heard you asking about hot baths. And the other question is, what about having your skin spray tanned? So to try and avoid the sun and getting in the sun, does the spray tanning affect your skin in any way? Thanks so much. It's Dee here.
Thank you, Dee.
Can I talk about electric blankets?
Yes.
Sure. You know, we've had electric blankets. I know it's great to get into a hot bed, But you have no idea, never mind your skin, you have no idea what electric blankets do to your sleep. And I've just, you know, I've just got this new ring from Finland that measures your different stages of sleep. And you can't believe when you keep your electric blanket on, you have no idea how it affects your deep sleep. And sleep is the foundation of health. Mm. I know we spoke about this a few weeks ago on Cape Talk. So electric blankets, I wouldn't, you know, number one, it's not very good with all the EMF that's going through your body. Even just the plug being into your, being in the socket, you still, and your electric blanket is off, you still got those EMFs. So it's very important not to sleep with electric blanket on. Maybe to warm the bed and then take it out, but don't sleep on the, you know, sleep during the whole night with your electric blanket.
It's a recipe for headache as well to do that. So, what about the second comment about the spray tan? You want to say that?
We don't even know the ingredients that are on the spray tan. So you can also inhale when they're busy spraying. So I'll say no, rather use the sunscreen in order for you, like, to protect yourself from the sun, but not the spray tents.
So not a good one in your book. Okay, then take it from the dermatologist. You heard it from her lips. I'm so glad somebody's asked a question about skin lightening ointments. We'll get to that in just a minute, but I know Di in the audience has been waiting very patiently to ask a question or two, so if we can just get the mic to her, please.
Thank you. Pippa and doctors, is pigmentation a permanent
problem?
Is it reversible at all? And how is it recognizable or distinguishable from other skin complaints, for example, rosacea?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking, Di. Maureen, would you like to respond?
Okay, rosacea, you'll find that you'll go red. Okay, so when you eat hot foods or you sit in, you know, you have a hot bath or you exercise or you drink alcohol, you'll go, your skin will take on this reddish complexion. And once again, that's linked to the gut. And I'm always on about the gut, but 80% of disease start in the gut. So rosacea is completely different, really, from pigmentation. And then once again, you have to decide what kind of pigmentation is it. Melasma, chloasma is the most difficult pigmentation. Hormonal pigmentation is the most difficult to treat because you can get the melanin sitting in the dermis, which is very difficult to resolve. So that's not as easy, but we can improve it. But you have to understand with melasma, it's a dynamic chronic condition, and you have to manage this problem indefinitely. It might not go away. It will not go away. So your pigmentation can get lighter, but it's not going to go away completely. And you have to have vigilant sun protection on your skin. Just one bad day in the sun can set you back 6 months. So once you take on a melasma course, you have to adhere to all the instructions that the doctor gives you and make sure that you have a proper SPF that not only does UVA, UVB, but also does infrared A and high energy visible light. So infrared A is any light with heat, like your computer screen, it's light with heat. You know, fluorescent bulbs, light with heat, TV screens. So any light with heat is infrared A. And then obviously also get infrared A from the sun. And then high energy visible light is also from the sun. So make sure that you have an antioxidant. We use antioxidant sunblocks that protect all four of the rays that cause UV damage. Okay, so you have to be vigilant with your sunscreen protection, like put it on in the morning and then put it on at lunchtime again, especially if you have a bad case of melasma. And if you're outdoors, no matter what you do, I tell my patients, no matter what you do, if you go to the beach and you can put a hat on and sit under the shade and put your sunscreen on, you will come back with pigmentation. Okay, so you really have to be vigilant about sun protection with melasma. And then the PIH we find very much easier to treat. Okay, we can do peels, we can give the topical products for that, together with SPF as well. And then what's the third one? Is sun damage. That's actually the easiest to treat because we have amazing lasers and lights that can treat and destroy that melanin in the epidermis. So those are actually the easiest to treat. The sun damage, you know, those big brown spots, that's easy to treat.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Thank you for your questions. Nompelo, somebody asking about skin lightening mixtures and are people still using them? Weren't they made illegal, etc.? Is this something that some people might try to use to treat pigmentation, misguidedly or otherwise?
It's always better to use under a doctor's dermatologist's eye. the skin lighteners. For deep pigmentation, yes, they can be used. But these days, people buy from the corner shops skin lighteners. So the thing about skin lighteners, it has to stop that melanin production. So it has to stop that tyrosinase that makes that melanin. So people ended up buying corticosteroids, and they use that long term, and then that causes more damage. Mm. So steroids is basically the main thing that people will use. So it's always better to go and see a dermatologist and then get proper help.
Because we know also, I mean, the products that are available in the corner store have got some real nasties in terms of the ingredients, which could cause long term damage.
So it's the mercury. So it's the mercury in these products that actually cause all the damage.
Okay, so really steer clear if you are still seeing them on the shelf. And
do not use it for prolonged periods. Maximum 3 months, and then you have to like cycle it. You cannot use it indefinitely. And you have to be extra vigilant with your sun protection.
As they don't even start. Because you don't know what's in there.
Don't you? We don't prescribe, you know, a hydroquinone.
Okay.
No. Yeah. It's part of our topicals at all. Okay. But it is out there, you know, because it's been banned in Europe and it's banned in Australia. It's banned in the United Kingdom. Mm. And even in the States, you're only allowed a very low dose of hydroquinone. And it has to be, like in South Africa, it's not banned, but it has to be prescribed by a medical doctor and has to be controlled by a medical doctor or dermatologist. You can't just get hydroquinone. And any hydroquinone you do get, beware, because it can cause serious skin problems.
Okay, beware.
And darkening of the skin, it can make it. I've seen patients who've abused it, and they've got this ochronosis, which is changing of the skin because they haven't had sun protection. They've had very high concentrations of hydroquinone, and they get, you know, these chibabas where you get these dark marks on the skin. But that happened years ago when it was, you know, unregulated. Mm-hmm. I haven't really seen, you know, younger patients with chibabas.
Still happening. Do you still see it? People still go and buy. Yeah.
They're buying it from these corner stores.
Why I'm saying don't even start. Just go seek medical help and get proper help for this.
Thank you for that. Well, one happy customer on the SMS line saying, after 17 years of hyperpigmentation, 2 Dermapen sessions, and I have never been happier. It has really worked for me. Is that a form of needling?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that feedback. I'm really glad that you found something that worked for you. Another WhatsApp saying, I have pigmentation, which I suspect has been caused by years of using steroids on my face for eczema. Is there any way of treating it, considering the eczema is still active? Nompela, would you like to respond?
So there's a lot of things that are available now that one can use. First, she has to stop the steroid. And the problem stopping steroid, she can get a steroid-induced rosacea from using steroids for a long term. And then it's best to go see a dermatologist so that you can get some help withdrawing those steroids. So non-steroid containing creams can be used. So there's a lot that can be done, but it's going to be a very long journey and the skin is not going to look good at all.
Okay, so be prepared for the long haul and do get help to see you through it. Mm-hmm. A quick question that a few people have asked. Liver spots, are they the same? Is that the same thing that we're talking about?
That's the sun damage I was talking. Yeah. It's much more easier to get rid of than actual
hyperpigmentation. Okay. So the takeaway message for all of our listeners today is vigilance about sun protection, and yet another reason to be vigilant about sun protection. We know already about the cancer risk, so here's another one for the sake of your skin. What else in terms of long-term prevention of pigmentation issues? I suppose we can tell women not to get pregnant, but that's not a long-term strategy for the population. Any other words of wisdom or advice to our listeners? Nompela, let's start with you.
Use sunscreen, like you have said, and then use some antioxidants as well. That does help. Try and cover your body as much as you can, even when you go to the beach. Gone are the days of lying outside and just exposing. And then watch what you are putting on your face, because remember, I said inflammation as well can cause the pigmentation. So just be wary of what you put on your skin, really.
Anything you'd add
just
to that,
another word of caution: if you are avoiding the sun completely, then you have to check your vitamin D3 levels, because that's so important to have, you know, because your sun gives you your vitamin D3. And if you're completely indoors and never go out in the sun, you must check your vitamin D3 levels. It's so important. It's such an important vitamin. It's actually a hormone. Yes.
Okay. So a balancing act, but one that's so important to get right. I want to say a big thank you to the members of our live studio audience who've joined us today, and a particular thanks to our two guests who have been with us in studio. For those who joined us late to the conversation, let me just remind you that you have been listening to Dr. Maureen Allam and Dr. Nompelo Ganshaw. Thank you both so much for the advice you've shared with our listeners today. And for those who tuned in late, you can sit back and listen to the entire podcast at your leisure. You'll find it shared on the Cape Talk website and on the Cape Talk app. Doctors, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.